wait till I get my money right.
Attention. InvestFest 2024 is coming back to Atlanta, and we at Earn Your Leisure are doing a crazy promotion. For every item you purchase on InvestFestEYL.com, we'll submit your name in a raffle to win an all-inclusive experience. To InvestFest 2024, you're automatically entered into the raffle to win this all-inclusive experience. Here's what you'll win. Round-trip airfare to Atlanta for two from Friday to Monday, or a $1,000 transportation and food stipend. One hotel room for three nights from Friday to Monday. Two VIP tickets to InvestFest. Two nightlife wristbands to all InvestFest Entertainment Network events. And black car service to and from Atlanta Airport. This offer runs until the end of June. Get your merch at InvestFestEYL.com and have a chance to win the grand prize. See you at InvestFest 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Isaac Hayes, the third.
What's up?
What's up, my brother?
How you doing?
Okay, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent, man.
This is a nice place you got, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, long time no see.
I know it's funny because, like, I think I see you guys, like, every couple weeks now.
That's for sure.
That's true.
For sure.
Yeah, true.
So we got to always find new things to talk about.
Yeah. You was
just on Blackout.
Yes, I was.
We talked about the creator economy.
Yeah.
Of course, you've been on Earn Your Leisure.
Yeah.
You've been on InvestFest stage.
Yeah.
You've been on Market Mondays.
This is true.
What else is there to do?
Now you have the rare distinction of having two episodes on the big show, which is very rare. It's rare territory, man.
Thank you.
Feeling about this?
I feel honored because I'm catching you guys at the right time, because every time I turn on television, you guys on television. Y'all are like really big programs. Like, you know, I'm seeing y'all with a lot of dope people expanding the brand, and I love it.
Well, you know, first and foremost, we're on fan base.
Yes. So yeah, you guys are.
So that's something that should be. People will probably already, by now already know that. But if you didn't know, you know, we've been in communication, and this is something that we are very vocal about as far as us wanting to support you, as far as giving you a platform. That's beneficial, but also us being on your platform as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I mean, I think it's probably one of the premier kind of like additions to what we've been building, because you guys validate us in a different way by, you know, your financial literacy. There's a seriousness and a wealth of information that people really need beyond just dances and, you know, fun stuff. But you guys are bringing real content to the platform. And I'm looking forward to actually expanding like this relationship beyond what anybody can think of, because I think, you know, your message is extremely valuable.
Appreciate it, brother. So for anybody that's under a rock, they don't know, Fanbase is a social media platform that allows any regular creator to earn money based off of subscriptions.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. I mean, well, first, Fanbase is a social network. It's free to download, free to use. I say that all the time. So sometimes people get the notion that Fanbase might cost money. It doesn't cost any money to download and use the platform. I would say look at it as a freemium model. So that you can use it like you would use Instagram or TikTok or whatever, but then you can also have this added layer of subscribers if you want to. And that's the part that I think is most important. I'm going to say this until the world acknowledges me for this, is that I invented peer-to-peer in-app purchase subscription on mobile devices. So that means what Fanbase allows you to do is take out your phone and use a fingerprint or a face scan through the App Store or the Google Store to subscribe to a person. Before, people would pull out credit cards. If you're using all these other apps that have subscribers, using a credit card. But once I did that, and we launched that in 2019, about 2 years later, all the other platforms started doing it, including Apple changed their model, Google changed their model to accommodate the vision that people are going to be subscribing to people more than Netflix.
Okay, so let's take it back a little bit. Yeah. You recently raised $17 million is the number that I'm hearing, right?
We raised 10.
You raised $10 million.
I've already raised $10 million in 3 years. And so that was extremely important because it gave us the capital kind of really to start and be acknowledged as a platform that people can really use, and gives us the ability to build what we wanted to build. Like we didn't have to really think about, I was funding this myself. Let's say that I spent like $200,000 of my own money. And at some point we were like, yo, we got to get this thing to the next level. And so, COVID had happened and we were in equity crowdfunding. Equity crowdfunding came along and gave me the opportunity to do that.
So, all right. So you raised $10 million, you're trying to raise another $7 million.
I'm not trying. I'm raising $7. I want to raise $17 million.
Okay. have you ever, why haven't you gone the venture capital route or angel, or like just, what made the crowdfunding situation appealing as opposed to trying to target VCs, trying to target angel investors? Maybe you did, I'm not sure. But
I think there's two major things that affected that decision. First and foremost was racial bias, like the ability for Black startups to get funded, right? That was one of the first things. And then secondly, we were in COVID.
Talk about racial bias though, because they might not fully understand.
So in 2023, Black startups received, I think, 0.69% of funding, right? And that was like so low. It was down from like 1.5% out of all capital. So out of all the capital that VCs invested, they invested almost a little over 0.5% into Black founders in all areas. So when you think about that's like 99.5% going to other people that are not Black. So the likelihood that you're going to get funded from a VC is so, like, it's not happening really. You know what I mean? It's very, very rare that those things happen. I even had a conversation with a good friend of mine, Chameleonaire, about 3 or 4 days ago. And we were talking about the equity crowdfunding route and how the timing is right now because venture capital is actually getting tighter with the purse strings. But something that frustrated him that he relayed to me is like, you're right about this capital. He's like, I can't remember what school he went to. And he's like, I saw a dude get up on stage and present and say he needed $20 million for a startup, a white kid. And they gave him 45 like that. Imagine just going into a room saying, I need $45 million to build my company. And somebody just cutting you a check saying, here, go do it. Like, they're not doing that for us. Like we're not getting those looks.
Yeah, that doesn't exist in our world. So, I mean, when people here raise, right, you raise the 10, you're going to raise the 7, either 17. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will look at, why do we need the 17? Right, they don't understand the capital, how capital intensive this could be. Mm-hmm. They know scaling. So what is the determining factor when you say this is the number we need to get to, right? You could have said, let's raise 27. Was it a realistic thing, or was, from a scalability standpoint, this is where we want to be at this point in our company?
So we came up with a 3-year plan. So up until this point, we funded Fanbase and been able to build the company at a steady pace. But right now we're in scale mode as opposed to startup mode. We're no longer a startup, in my opinion. We're trying to scale the company. So to do that, we actually have to build functionality and build faster to keep up with the demands of what users want, especially if we want to capitalize on exactly what's going on with creators and monetization. So first and foremost, $17 million was a number because we're valued at $160 million now. So when I first launched the company, we were valued at $20 million. Then I did a raise of $50 million. Then I did a raise of $85 million. And now this raise right now is valued at $160 million. And so roughly about 10% of the company is up for investment to the general public on startengine.com/fanbase, if you can see this. So for that reason, we wanted to be able to, what I say, accommodate what users want and scale. So there's a lot of things that go into building a startup. Like, this stuff is expensive. I know, and you guys know more than anything, and tech is extremely expensive. And so so to scale the company, first thing we want to do is focus on scaling our functionality, our productivity. So right now, let's say I have a team of 25 developers, right? we're going to be able to triple that. So now we'll have 75 developers. We'll double that, triple that. We have 75 developers that can actually help, you know, build this. And so when I tell people that come to Fanbase and say, oh, well, Fanbase doesn't have X, Y, Z, or we want this, I'll tell you, if you want dark mode, invest in Fanbase. If you want carousels, invest in Fanbase. If you want the same functionality that TikTok has, that all these platforms have, this raise will give us the ability to catch those platforms without a doubt. Well, like with the development, I will be able to catch them. But then there's another thing that we want to do is go beyond the innovation that we see that other platforms aren't doing, that they're just not capitalizing on. And so they're missing their mark.
Is there a point in the development process, because technology does move so fast, mm-hmm. as you're developing, you have to be almost precise with what you want to do, because if another platform does it, now it's like you're behind the wheel. Now you're the second person that, or the third or the fourth fourth platform that has something. Now it feels like it's old and I have to figure out how to innovate again. How frustrating does that get?
That's not really frustrating, because honestly, a lot of these platforms, what I've noticed is that they don't innovate. Mm-hmm. The advantage that I think, which is so important about what we're building, because as a Black founded company that's not Black only, which is extremely important that I have to say, because the media will try to say, oh, because it's built by somebody Black, it's exclusively for Black people. And sometimes we get pigeonholed to that. But what I noticed is that, oh, when I started getting into this space and seeing that my ideas, what we had, and a lot of the things that we filed, like 7-8 patents for some of the functionality that we've done. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, it isn't these guys aren't any smarter than us. They just got the money. But what they do is they put a product out there and say, here, guys, play with it. Make this cool stuff cool. Oh, you want DMs? Oh, they want DMs. Give them that. Oh, okay. They want retweets? Give them that. So it's just money. It's not about innovation. We're the ones that come up. Kids, Black culture, we're the ones that come up with all these things that people talk about all the time that get put into social media products. We're the ones that bring those into these spaces, but we don't own them. So that's the reason why I was like, okay, if it's just money, then let's go get the money. And then now we have a company that rivals the TikToks and the Instagrams of the world, at least by functionality. Now, execution is one thing, but I don't doubt our ability to do that. But at least we've leveled the playing field for people can make a decision.
So 17 million, what does that do to the landscape of like Black startup tech companies? Like, is this something that can be used as a landmark? How will this change the dynamic for Black entrepreneurs that are in tech that's trying to raise capital?
So from a social media standpoint, it'll be pretty impressive, because in tech, there are a lot of startups that are founded by Black people that often receive funding and they raise lots of money. But two of the most important things that I see are the control of the company and the equity of the company. So I'm not going to name names, but I can name companies, startups raise $100 million, but 99% of the company is owned by institutional investors, and then they force the founder out. And great, you get to walk away and say, okay, I made $20, $30 million in tech. I'm a tech founder, but you didn't make a dent. My idea with equity crowdfunding and the way that I decided to do Fanbase is I wanted something that I could be intentional about and build and create generational wealth by allowing people to invest, but also people be able to monetize their content. So from the social media standpoint, we never been here before. And I talk about this, like I was just saying today, if we don't get this right, and by means of Fanbase, I don't know, we can never have a conversation that we didn't have the opportunity to really take control of an infrastructure and social media and do that, because we haven't. I've been researching the companies right now in existence. I can only find 9 Black founded social media apps in existence. And out of all 9, there's only one that is not directly geared towards the Black community. And that's Fanbase. Mm-hmm. I'm building this as if I'm building something for the entire planet as opposed to that. And then on the equity crowdfunding side, this is unprecedented, because I'm the first Black man to raise $10 million in the Reg CF space, which is the level where we were at before, where I raised the 10, and the 17 is something called a Reg A plus round. And so that's a whole different level of investment, a whole different level of compliance and stuff that we had to do with the SEC. So I'm proud to do that. So all this is unprecedented. It should really shape the mold and really change the way that people think about how they scale and build their companies, because I see often times people don't have the money to really retain ownership of their company. So I'm trying to retain as much ownership of this. So then down the line, if we do need to raise, let's say $300 or $400 million, mm-hmm. right? There's the equity to be able to do that, but also give people the opportunity to invest. So this is a, you know, a watershed moment, I say.
Yeah, one of the things you talked about was the SEC approval process.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really unprecedented. We had a conversation and then like 2 weeks later, like, I can't believe it. It happened so fast.
Yeah.
Talk about that, because a lot of people, number one, probably don't even know what the SEC does,
mm-hmm.
and how, I guess, your work ethic and how the company has been raised prior to that point and how it helped in that approval process.
So, well, the first thing I'll say is a lot of people that want to raise capital is the way you construct your business. Because me doing this, people have asked me like, oh, okay, cool. Just, can you hook me up with StartEngine so I can go raise money? Like, it's just that easy. And I'm like, it don't work like that. Before I even made it to StartEngine, I had to, you know, form my company. I, you know, incorporated in Delaware to C Corp and creating stock and all these things that existed, you know what I'm saying? And then I had to make sure that our accounting was together, and I prepared all this. I filed trademarks for Fanbase. This was before any code was ever written, before I ever even met my CTO. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to prepare the actual business infrastructure of the company, because now I'm coming from a place of the music business. I'm coming from a place of learning from the mistakes that my father made. Like, okay, ownership, you got to make sure that that's locked in the beginning. So then now we get to the point where we build the company, we raise this capital and get approved by StartEngine to raise in a Reg CF. And only 2% of people, every color, every race, get approved for equity crowdfunding. So it's rare to even be included in that.
Mm-hmm.
So let alone then be successful at that process. So I credit my COO, CTO, and our CFO for keeping us really, you know, dialed in on how we raise our capital. Because when you try to go for a Reg CF round, it's a lot less lenient. All you have to do is a financial review, you know what I'm saying, with the SEC to comply. It's not really, you know, that complicated. When you're going to Reg A, which the difference between Reg CF and Reg A is, in a Reg CF and crowdfunding, you can only raise up to $5 million in a calendar year, right? And the most that someone can invest in that round is $100,000 at one time. When you go to a Reg A, you can raise up to $75 million in a calendar year, and there is no limit on what someone can invest. Institutional, like accredited investors or non-accredited. So if somebody wants to come along and write a check for $10 million, then the fan base, they can come and write a check for $10 million and take, you know, 2/3 of the round if they wanted to do so. But it's almost like you're going public. It's almost like you're filing to go public. The level of compliance you have to, you know, go through. It's like a 3-month process.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that process with the SEC and an amazing company called CrowdCheck and our partners at StartEngine. And they were warning us. They were like, hey, look, you know, this whole process with the SEC, it takes like 6 months, because every time you submit, they always got some questions. They always want you to do something. And we filed to be able to, you know, launch the round. And the SEC responded with a no objection, which is like, you know, or non-review, I'm sorry, non-review. And they were like, they were surprised. They're like, SEC ain't got no questions. Like, y'all can go ahead and launch the round. And that's just unheard of. And that just speaks to how we've handled our business. Like, I'm very, you know, I hate to say that I have this anxiety as a Black person entering into a space that is not often accepted by Black people, but even one of the things that I do at Fanbase is I don't even take a salary. Like, I've not paid myself a dime to run Fanbase since I launched the company, because it's like, who cares if I pay myself $100,000, $200,000 if that could go towards development? So I wanted to make sure that everything is available. Like, even when you go and file for this, all of your company filings have to be public. So you can go on startengine.com and look, and then go to the SEC and see all our filings. So all our financials, everything has to be open to the public, because you have to give them so much visibility and so much transparency for a round like this.
So how do you figure out your valuation? Because you had said something about, I think the company's worth $150 million, something like that?
160.
How is that determined?
So initially, before, when equity crowdfunding first started, you could just name a valuation, right? And they were like, and then ironically, when I get there, they were like, oh, well, we have some rules now. Now you have to actually find companies that are comparable to your product in the marketplace. And then you can say, okay, since this company raised this capital at this valuation, you may do the same. And so the first thing that I saw is we didn't have audio rooms in Fanbase. But what I first saw was that with 2,500 users, Clubhouse was allowed to raise $10 million at a $100 million valuation off the rip. So I'm like, okay, well, all I need to do is, all at this time, I was raising $1 million at a $20 million valuation. So we were well below what was needed. And at that time, Fanbase had over 10,000, 15,000 users. Like, so we were straight independent. So without any institutional capital or any crowdfunding capital, we had 10,000 users. We were already generating revenue. No, these apps haven't started. A lot of these apps haven't started to do that yet. So when you think about certain startups that are out here, you also got to think about you're a startup, then you're generating revenue, and then you're profitable. So those are three big differences. And so the fact that we were generating revenue, we had already had a certain number of users, and we were able to compare to other products in the marketplace, like Patreon. I use Patreon as an example. I use this other app called FanHouse, which ironically, FanHouse got venture capital backed. They raised $40 million in a seed round, and they were out of business in 18 months. But they don't look like me. I'm saying this for a reason that, you know, we have to go above and beyond. But they spent that money in 18 months and they were acquired by another company. And that company just went and raised $40 million. And I'm like, it's cool though. I know they, you know, I already know what I'm up against, but I'm cool with that.
So as you calculate the amount of users, there's a threshold that you had to, because I always hear you talk about $1 billion company.
Mm-hmm.
This is a $1 billion company. What's the threshold as far as users? Because what you said is important. Being profitable and having revenue is important.
Mm-hmm.
We just saw Reddit go public, right? They mm-hmm. haven't been profitable in 19 years.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, when you think about it, like, wait, 19 years, how are they trading? But you have all those things. So what's the threshold of users, revenue that you have to see to say, all right, this is where we've reached our $1 billion valuation?
So typically in social media, your valuation is based on total users and then MAU. Because what happened before is, like, let's say a company like Instagram, that you would scale your company because of these companies are based on advertising. They would scale it up to enough users where they knew that they could go ahead and then turn on advertising, and then they could try to begin to make the company profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the old model. The old model was build an app, get a bunch of people on it, and then flip the advertising switch and then start to make money. I didn't want to enter this space that way because I always felt like advertising, what I was seeing, experiencing in social media is that advertising was actually limiting the way that people could be visible on social, and people care more about being seen than actually making money. So the fact that advertising limits that, I didn't want to put the limitation of being a company that ran ads. So it changes the way that we're able to value our company, but we still have users. So right now, Fanbase has we have about 595,000 users, right? With no serious, like, major marketing push. Again, I talk about all these things that sound like I'm saying them very calmly, but these are all things that just haven't typically existed ever. So as we continue to scale, like my goal, even with this $17 million round, is to scale the company to 1 million users by the end of this year. And, you know, having, you know, users like you guys on here creating content, like you guys and other people that are joining the platform, are going to help us get there. So that's always also going to increase the valuation. Now, again, tomorrow, if Cardi B come on Fanbase tomorrow, she bring 1 million people, Fanbase is a $1 billion company. It's like, it works like that.
Mm.
Like, that's really what users increase the value of a social media platform, which is scary because I always talk about, like, well, so you're telling me that, I say this all the time, so you're telling me I can invest money in Fanbase, then use it, and then increase the value of the asset that I own by simply coming to use it. That's like, you're literally, it should almost be unfair, because if I was, and I say this before, I don't understand why people don't understand this, is like, if you're an artist or a musician or an athlete or an entertainer that knows that you can drive people to where you want to be, but you never got a chance to invest in Instagram or TikTok, but you see how powerful those companies are, then Fanbase is the opportunity for you, no matter what color you are, no matter like your age or whatever. It's an opportunity for you to actually have equity in actually a social media platform. So that's what's really going to increase, like I said, increase our valuations, just how fast we scale users. And it's also the velocity in which it's done. So if it takes me 5 years to get to 1 million users, that ain't good. If it takes me 5 months, that changes everything. It's also the velocity in which you raise, you know, you right. raise your up.
You said something about marketing and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
In the media space, we brought this up about some of the difficulties that transpire when trying to find ad partners or even having sponsorships or advertising in our media space, but the social media space, especially for Fanbase. What's that process like for you as far as getting people to come on the app to have advertising?
So, well, we have to be careful about how we do that process, because advertising is something that I don't necessarily want to add to the platform, because we're already in a position that we're generating revenue. The part about advertising is we got to find ways for it to be unique. We have to find ways for it to be kind of cool that don't interrupt the user experience, okay, right? And so, and then advertising, again, is like, it's tough because I was watching the Elon interview the other day, and I could tell, like, he was blaming the fact that advertisers also, you know, are leaving, we're leaving X, but it's also like the environment in which you curate for users, the experience is also, advertisers don't want to be on a platform where there's a bunch of hate speech, you know what I'm saying, racism, pornography, and that's kind of like what X is at this point. So it's kind of hard. And he says, oh, well, you can just, you know, you can decide where you want your ads to run, which is two sides of a problem. One, he's admitting that corporations like Facebook can control the visibility that you have in your content. If an advertiser comes on there and says, I don't want any LGBTQ content showing next to my content, then they can turn the LGBTQ down, or they can turn the black down to run their ads, and they can make their money, they can turn it back up. So if you ever see a dip in your engagement on social media, like, you'll see this in November. Anybody that talks about politics, your engagement is going to get flatlined around November, because they're going to make sure that you have no effect on being able to influence an election anymore. They can say, okay, you can post something like zero views, it's going to go down. And I see this problem with creators all the time. And so then, but he's also admitting that you can pick and choose where your content goes, but you can't necessarily control what the user is going to say. So you can still say, oh, I want my ads to show next to a particular genre. Like, I want my ads to show next to people that like sports, which it doesn't mean that somebody's not going to get on there and say something racist or post something foul or whatever, or misleading. So advertising is tricky. That's why I don't like it, because also they control your company. The two things that control your company is either when it's public, the general public, so your stockholders, and your advertisers. If I build a company independent of public stock and advertisers, and I can still generate revenue, then I'm always in control of the way that I want my company to be. Fan base can be as ethnically centered as possible without any fail. You know what I mean? We can do the things. If there's things that we want to bring attention to, whatever the cause, whatever the situation is, whatever the time, whatever it is, we can do that, because there's no one that can force our hand to say, we don't want you participating in this, because we control the pockets.
So why the model, as far as getting money to creators from day one, why is that so important? And if this works, how is it going to change the landscape of social media?
Well, the first thing I think about is disruption. So if you're not pissing people off, then you're doing something wrong. So the first thing, when I got the kind of the idea to even build the company, I knew that this was going to disrupt industries, because people are always talking right now about TV and film, music. We're having all these conversations about how artists aren't getting paid enough for streaming, how athletes aren't getting paid. Like the college players just got NIL to be able to do those kinds of things. We're seeing, you know, movie stars get their TV shows canceled. You know, Issa Rae rap shit's getting take off, and now she needs to go independent because she can own her content and all that kind of stuff. So for me, it's like, if I don't create an environment or an infrastructure where the community can own and monetize from day one, it actually puts no limits, because it circumvents all the industries. The fact that you can pick up your phone and subscribe directly to a person changes business for every single person on the planet. I always say this, there's nobody that's on Fanbase that is not a business. A business is the ability to receive revenue or income for a product or service you provide. So for that very reason, by default, every single person on Fanbase is a business. And so I think that the ability for us to generate revenue from day one, we don't have to figure it out. There are apps out here that have not figured it out, Clubhouse has not figured out how to generate revenue. There's a lot of these startups that are in the social media space have not figured out how to make revenue, but going to direct to consumer and allowing the user to decide what they want to pay for. And we're seeing that with younger kids anyway. And that's another thing too, is paying, like, the future is, you know, I always talk about when you see Kai Cenat. Kai is 22 years old. He has about 85,000 subscribers, making $400,000 a month. I can't see that as a human being and not say, I could do this as an athlete. I could do this as a musician. I don't have to be a gamer. It doesn't matter. People are going to want to see the content they want. So it's extremely important that you know, we provide a new way for people to monetize direct consumer, to circumvent all these pillars that block and rob artists and athletes and movie stars and everybody.
You know, I mean, it's pretty evident, right? That's the way we can see it, because now we can see it with the athletes creating their own platforms, right? We're just seeing LeBron, he has a podcast now, Draymond comes to mind. What do you think it's going to take for that drastic change for people to say, all right, we're not going to go with the traditional ways of social media? Something like fan base makes too much sense for us not to be part of.
I think the first person that, and I'm looking at Kai now, because again, it's so interesting to me that he's making more money streaming with subscribers than rappers are making recording an album, putting it out, and going and doing shows. Like, it's like, you can still do that, but there's still a lifestyle and a personality that's involved. We're all human, so we all have social lives or funny and humor or whatever, so to be able to monetize that. I think that it'll shift when someone like him, and I've seen this before, like, again, there are these moments that happen that just have me scratching my head, like, I can't believe no one is picking up on the fact that Bad Baby made $40 million in a year, you know, for subscribers. Kai Cenat is making $400,000 a month on subscribers, and everybody's just not dropping a plate of food. Let the plate break and shatter. Say, wait, what did I just hear? Hold on, I'm not finna do all this extra shit when I can just really create and live and exist on social media and have fun, and then monetize and still, you know, have the same, you know, the same experience.
So, do you think that this will be beneficial for the every average day person, right? Because everybody's not going to be casting up.
Yeah.
So the average person that has 1,000 followers, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to make a lot of money. So why does fan base make sense to them?
Well, first, okay, so I'm going to say this, because I'm going to talk about the investment portion real quick. When I first started on Start Engine, the minimum to invest in fan base was $245, right? The minimum to invest in fan base now is $399. That's the minimum to invest. StartEngine.com/fanbase, shout out. But what I say is more important than that is that there are thousands of users on Fanbase that have made the money using Fanbase that they invested in Fanbase. So it's not about, I'm not telling everybody to get on here and think that you're going to be a multimillionaire, but I do believe that most people have enough money to make monthly the ability to pay their rent, or, you know, to get gas or put food in your refrigerator. Like, I see people making that amount of money. I see a user, you know, there's a user that's made $10,000 this year that has less than 3,500 followers, an extra $10,000 a year. Like, the average American salary is $40,000. You're making a quarter of what you would have to do to make the bare minimum as a salary in this country, just making content. And it's not like you have to sit live and stream all day long. You post content, people subscribe, and they make that money. So if I can make enough money to put gas in my car just by posting content, if I'm a young kid, of course I would do that. If I can feed myself, I don't have to. And then that's like 100 subscribers. Again, if you know, you get 5,000 people, 5,000 people is a small number of people when there's 6 billion people on the planet. For 5,000 people paying you $2.50 a month, it's $12,500 a month, $150,000 a year. That's more than 97% of Americans make. And that's just 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not, you know, if we took that down, like I said, we took that down to 500 people, you're still making $15,000 a year. Who wants to turn an extra $15,000 a year in America? Like, just on making content, it's like, it's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah. We spoke 2 years ago, in your person, and from all the signs, right, people are making money, right, fluctuates depending on the user, how many followers they have. The company's making money, and it's profitable. I asked you then, so I ask you now, mergers and acquisitions is always a part of business.
Yeah.
Have the phones been ringing even more so as you continue to innovate, as you continue to, what I see, disrupt social media in the sense where you can start revolutionizing this thing? Have the phone calls been coming in no?
I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
And because fan base is I always say there's two phases to success in building businesses. It's the beat them phase and it's the join them phase. We're still in beat them mode. They're still sitting back like, I'm going to sit here really going to raise this $17 million and really like change the game in the way that he does. One thing that Trump's race is green, is money. And so, and I think I've had the best, like, you know, example in someone seeing the way that Tyler Perry built his business. At first it was about beat him. Then it was like, oh, well, now we got to join him. You know, at some point. In the beginning, there were no deals, but then it was TBS, and then it was Lions Game, then it was OWN, and then it became Netflix and Amazon, and now it's like, okay, cool. It's BET. It's like, okay, here.
Yeah.
So fan base is always, until we get the, we're going to be in the beat 'em phase, because this is majorly disruptive in the way that I say all the time. Again, it's like, I think that this is one of the most pivotal moments in technology, social media, and wealth building, because we've never been here before. You cannot name a time that there's been a social media company that's been founded that allows the public to invest. So now anybody without restriction can actually own part of something that they use. And then there's no...
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Limit into how fast, you know, or how big these companies can get. When you're looking at Facebook has a market cap of $2.2 trillion. Mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking about $2 trillion. I mean, granted, like, cool, I think Facebook is something that's like a one in a lifetime company, but there's still companies, even if you remove Instagram from Facebook, it's still a $300 billion company. You know what I'm saying? If you're looking at TikTok separated from ByteDance, it's still probably $100-200 billion company.
It's valued at 160.
Yeah. So I'm like, you understand like how okay, so now, so think of that. So think of now $160 billion company that's owned by people that look like us. We ain't never been there before. I don't even know who the richest black person on the planet is. I mean, I live with like 19 billion. What's the richest? Probably about 19 billion?
Legal Dango, yeah.
Right. Yeah, like 19 billion. Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, yo, we never, and my point is for us to really build and make and transform wealth. Not only is it, and my goal is not to be worth more than 19 billion. My goal is to create 10 or 15 other people that are worth or multi-billionaires, because technology is the fastest way. I heard Robert Smith say this. He's like, technology is the fastest way to build wealth in this country. It's like all the 8 of the top 10 richest people on the planet are in technology. Oracle, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and Elon with Tesla and X. It's like, yo, those are all the people. Only people, Bernard Arnault is the number one guy, and he owns every other brand in existence, and then Berkshire Hathaway. You know what I'm saying? But it's technology. So we're in an unprecedented amount of time because ownership and equity in these tech companies, these are companies that can be worth $100 billion, you know, like $100 billion, $160 billion. It's totally achievable. We've never been there before. And I think, you know, I think we have the unique opportunity. And again, I was telling people here today, I was like, yo, we get this wrong, you can't, don't blame me, because it's literally here for us to take advantage of. And that's why, you know, the raise that we're doing was so important, because it gives, there's no excuses. Once I raise $17 million, I give everybody everything that they want. If you want certain songs you want, certain functionalities you want, certain features you want, I can give you that in a year. Like, by the end of the year, I can give you most of the things that you want. And then we get to do the things that I want to do. There's some of the things that I talk about. Like, we just launched branded audio on web. And I was like, no one's doing that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, man, if they're not doing this, there's so many other ideas that are available that we can do. So, like, again, they're going to be in beta phase until they say, okay, now we got to go invest in them, because obviously he's going to keep going. So
let me ask you this. As well, what's the path to profitability? Like, how do you make money in the long term, even for investors, right? To know, like, okay, I'm investing in this company, and then eventually they're going to become profitable or sell or go public. Because you say you don't like advertisers. Mm-hmm. So the subscription-based model, mm-hmm. that's the only way that you're going to plan to make money?
No, that's not the only way. I can't tell you every other way we're going to make money, because there are other things there. There's layers on top of layers that are built in ways that you can do this. But I'm keeping those a secret, because, again, nobody thinks of this stuff. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. To explain to people that invest in equity crowdfunding and startups this way, you're investing in a period of time where, you know, 99% of the general public never gets this opportunity, because these opportunities have been available to accredited investors for so long. And I talk about that. That's so important, because that has nothing to do with race at that point. Like, the accredited investor rule has been in effect since 1933. And so up until 2015, you know, 83 years or however long it was, you couldn't invest. So now, when you're investing in seed stage companies, you ride the life of the company. So I say you're with us to the moon or to the ground, right? And it's a riskier investment. But the difference is with retail investors and equity crowdfunding is with institutional investors, they will require these minimums. Like, you need to put $10,000, $50,000 in to invest, right? And everybody can get $10,000, $50,000, but $4.99, people gonna spend $4.99 at Mastro's or some steakhouse or at the strip club or whatever it is. And they might spend $4.99 like two or three times a month. You understand what I'm saying? Because people always say, like, okay, people don't really have money. I'm like, the Black community spends $2.2 trillion a year on shit. You're telling me that you can't take a weekend off and say, look, I'm not going to spend $4.99 on this Fresh Fit and, you know, I'm taking some girl to dinner or whatever, buying whatever we buy. Say, just this one moment, I'm going to throw some money in here in this startup. And I'm going to forget about it. And what happens is you ride with us to what is called a liquidity event. So how people exit companies. So when you hear these conversations about these entertainers, celebrities, people that have invested in startups, when Will.i.am was talking about how he was in Beats and he was an investor in Beats, and then he got paid when they sold to Apple. Wow. So that's the same way. It's either an acquisition or you go public. So when you hear people like, okay, Coinbase goes public, whatever, then they cash out their shares. So those are the two eventualities for fan bases, either going public, which is like, okay, cool, we go public, we're putting a portion of the company available for the general public, for retail investors to invest. But that's way after the fact. That's after we already got to $1 billion valuation. It's like, cool, you're gonna see that return on your investment, but it's gonna be way slower than these high risk investments that don't require a lot of capital, or someone that is not, you know, I guess a too big of a competitor will come along and purchase us, like, outside of what's going on. Because I know Facebook is not, and Facebook wouldn't purchase us because they're already on the head for trying to buy too much stuff anyway. So someone would be like, all right, cool, we're going to come along and purchase fan base. And then everybody cashes out and walks off into the sunset with a bag.
Yeah. Are you finding that? Because I would imagine that a lot of the people who are using crowdfunding or using it for the first time, are you finding yourself having to go through an education process with some of the investors, or are people, because of the time and obviously the financial revolution that's happened, they're coming in with a different knowledge base when coming to invest for the company?
No, you know, the irony in that is that most people, I always say politics and finance, you guys probably know this more than anything. It's like, when you guys start talking about some of the stuff you're talking about, 99% of the people get intimidated and just turn off. Mm-hmm. You really have, it's your responsibility to learn what you guys learn. Just as much as I learned about tech and investing in startups, it's your job to educate yourself on those things. And the same thing in politics. People feel like you're talking over their head, so they don't want to look stupid. They don't feel like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. So they kind of act like they do, the nod in their head, like, yeah, you know, I'm diversified, I got a portfolio. Don't know what none of that shit mean. Like, none of it. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I overshare the information because I feel like we need to know. And the way that I communicate is definitely something that I feel like everybody can understand. When I say you'll go buy some crazy tennis shoes, but you can spend that and actually have equity and ownership in the company and explain how the process works and how you actually grow with a startup. All this stuff is new, so I don't mind sharing that information to people so that it's more than transparent. It's educational. I love putting us on. I love telling people, like, yo, this is the way to go. This is how we do this, because not only for what Fanbase does, but for anybody that wants to fund their businesses. I've recommended now, I think, four or five companies to Start Engine. I think three of them have gone on to raise a million plus dollars. The other ones kind of almost met their goals. They didn't, but it's still me putting people in position to actually accomplish their dreams when they couldn't go get institutional capital.
So as far as challenges, like, what are some challenges or threats in the space for you?
Well, I mean, the first challenge is actually, and I gotta say this again, because I learned this process, and I'm actually sharing the information that I'm just learning now. So when you apply for Reg A crowdfunding, there are different rules. So the Reg CF space is a lot more lenient. So when I did the Reg CF, when I raised that $10 million in the Reg CF, I could go on radio, I could go on TV, I could just say whatever I wanted to say and do what I wanted to do. When you move up to the Reg A space, you are prohibited from going on live television. So any so I can never go on CNN or Bloomberg or whatever, or live radio and promoting a raise. You can't do that. You can only promote the raise where there's a clickable link to the raise and a clickable link to that filing that I say that's a disclosure of all the stuff that you did. So that makes it very, very hard. I'm fortunate to be able to be on a program like this, where this is on the internet and on the web, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes that so difficult is, like, those rules are from 1995. Like, they equity crowdfunding came along in 2015, and I'm still having to abide by rules that were from 1995. So hopefully the SEC see some way to change that, because it's really hard to raise this type of capital without being able to have other ways other than just knowing people or spending an enormous amount of money creating ads and marketing. I could go run ads on Facebook and Instagram, but a lot of times you spend $200,000 for every million that you raise. So even I would still spending $1 million just to raise the money that I need and running ads, and that doesn't help. So I'm being as shrewd as I can and efficient as I can in doing this. That's the biggest challenge is how we navigate this new level of crowdfunding to be able to do that. Other than that, I think we have to prepare for the things that we don't know. I always know that they're challenges, but I don't look at them as challenges. I just look at them as puzzles that I have to solve, or things that I have to learn, or obstacles that you have to overcome. It's not like I'm stuck. I believe that capital, again, I confidently believe that capital is probably the biggest hurdle to most anyone building their businesses. We don't have a problem creating great ideas. There's great ideas in all types of companies that get created every day. We don't have issues with that. It's how we scale these businesses. It's the ability to take capital and then scale your business to the next level. I know people that have phenomenal businesses, but it's the access to capital, how we scale those businesses. That's the biggest challenge, is the money.
So as you're scaling, you got to build a team.
Yeah.
Right. So talk about that process, because not only are you the founder and CEO of it, but you're also making sure that everything here is running smoothly. You got to have a process and the innovation too. So how are you balancing all these roles with this?
So, well, you have to kind of like delegate. You have to actually delegate responsibility. So I've done a lot of delegating responsibility. My CTO, COO, Ramiro Canavas, brilliant guy. Silvana, who's our finance director, who's our interim CFO. And then underneath them, their building team. And so it's my job. Like I'm a visionary. I accept my role as a visionary. I'm the big ideas, the, you know, overall general direction of what Fanbase is going to do. But I trust the people that I've brought on board to handle those fine details. But I also educate myself on that process, especially the way that we did it through equity crowdfunding. I say this all the time. Through equity crowdfunding, I know more about my business than most people do because I got to know the finances. I got to know the corporate structure. I got to know the taxes and the legal. I got to know all these SEC rules and regulations and all these things that most people never think about. They just go get money from some investor and don't realize they screwed up or what they own. So this raise is also going to help us actually attract more talent. I think, you know, we need to be able to hire people that are worth $250,000 a year of salary. Like, we need to be able to hire people that hire people that really know marketing and know advertising and know different forms of development. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, I think the team can build anything, but it doesn't hurt to be able to say, oh, you're the guy that builds algorithms on TikTok or used to work there. Yeah, come over here and build ours, you know, and we'll be able to actually get talent that competes in all these other companies to be able to do that. And that's the most important thing I think people know. I always hear people, you know, they say, well, do you have, you know, well, what about the algorithm or what about, and I'm like, yo, like, you don't understand how much all this costs. So, and able to do that, I'm not some guy that can go get $45 million and buy a Ferrari and say I'm a tech founder and not do anything with it. Like, I would spend that money very meticulously. And I being in Atlanta also stretches our paper crazy because we're not in San Francisco where, you know, you got to pay people $250,000 salaries just to walk in there. The real estate's so crazy expensive. And I'm isolated. I like the fact that I'm here. I like that I'm underestimated. So I get to build a team that no one thinks is, you know, is going to do that. But they have to respect the technology. There's nobody, even when I got off the phone with Chameleonaire, he was like, I gave him some of the other things that we're working on behind the scenes, he goes, this doesn't look like you've raised $10 million. He goes, this is like you've raised 40. I said, I know. I said, that's why I like, don't get, I said, you gave me $40 million. You know what I would do with $40 million? I'm so serious about this and my tone doesn't change. My energy doesn't change. My commitment to this doesn't change. I really love this. So I don't mind missing out on going to all the cool stuff. This is what I do every day, all day, because I know how important it is for the opportunity for us to put ourselves in position with generational wealth and monetization. So I take it super serious.
So like for social media, you know, engagement, mm-hmm. that's like a big thing as far as, you know, driving you, putting you in the algorithm. Mm-hmm. So from social media landscape, talk about engagement. Like, where did that even come from? How is that game rigged? How the whole engagement play, and then how does your platform relate to that when it comes to engagement?
So typically, social media was really based on following, right? Followers. When you think of MySpace, you think of Facebook or Friends, you know, stuff like that. And that was when we were in a time where social media was so much more personal. And I think we're forgetting that this is a young person's game. And so I was laughing the other day. I was like, honestly, we were talking about Freaknik and how, like, for the generation of people that got on Facebook in 2004, Facebook turns 20 this year, right? So when people got on Facebook in 2004, it was probably the first place where you could digitally save your photos. So for anybody on Facebook from 2009 to 2010, it's basically a photo album for you now. It's like where your old ex-girlfriends are, all the stuff you did in college, all that kind of stuff is there. And it wasn't so much about engagement. As we moved into as video entered into social media, it's views, right? And those views scale your following. But what happens with advertising is that now that you add video to social media, and again, I'm saying the quiet part out loud, it's just simply think of this. every single person that's on social media that can put video on their page, you are a television network. So for that very reason, however you measure or monetize advertising with television, you can monitor and measure advertising on social media. So if you have 17 or 18 million followers on social media right now, you have the monetary equivalent of Sunday Night Football on NBC. Mm-hmm. You have that visibility. If you got 100 million followers, right, you have the you have the advertising equivalent of the Super Bowl, right? So Facebook knows that, and the advertisers know that. And so if there was no limit on engagement, then they would bypass these companies and come directly to people to say, hey, while you're doing this thing you're doing on your page, whatever it is, and 100 million people can see you, or 17 million people will do that, hold this can for us and say, hey, by the way, go buy this. And that's advertising to 17 million people. And the difference is these programs come on one time a week, once a year, right? But imagine being able to reach 17 million people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. That's the quiet part out loud that I understand people like are putting that portion together. It's like, we're all moving. Social media is television now. Our behaviors change. So with fan base, I want to say following is dead. Engagement is the new king of the hill, right? It's the people want to be seen. And so I would much rather have 1 million people see my video and have 10,000 followers and have 1 million followers and have 10,000 people see my video, which is happening now, which more people are like, yo, I got 15 million followers and every time I post a video, I get 86,000 views. I want to flip it. You know what I'm saying? I want people to have 1.5 million views and have 86,000 followers because we don't show people content based on who follows you. We show content based on the things that you like plus who follows you. So your following is already guaranteed.
Isn't that already how social media works?
No.
It's based off of what they think you would interact with.
It's based off
the algorithm.
And yeah,
what the algorithm thinks that you're going to interact with.
Absolutely. But again, it's still limited. Like, just by default, anybody watching this program right now, right? Anybody watching this program right now, go to your page. And when you tap on somebody's profile on Instagram and say in notifications when you want to see lives and see what it'll say. It'll say, do you want to get notified some of the time, all of the time, or never? It's already set to some. So that means every time somebody you follow goes live, they're not notifying everybody that goes live. By default, they're suppressing your content by default. Because again, they have to limit your visibility. These platforms are in competition with users. They can't let you can go look at anybody's Reels videos. Go look at somebody who you follows following versus the amount of people that see their content. Now, granted, everybody's not on social media 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but still over the course of a month, if I have 1.5 million followers and people are tapping in, even if I have, you know, I get 750,000 views or whatever based off that, but you're not seeing that. You're seeing people like Cardi B with 100 plus million followers get 2 million, 6 million views. So you already know the people that want to see her content aren't seeing her content because that's her. Imagine being able to reach 100 million people saying, go buy my album, go buy my song. Like, that's the future. The problem is the albatross of advertising that TikTok and Instagram are tied into. They just can't turn off the advertising switch and go to the monetization switch because 95% of the income that is made on Facebook comes from advertising. TikTok, enormous amount of money that TikTok made is from advertising. So they're still going to have to play that game, right? There is no game when it's like, okay, we work off a rev share model. You have a following, you monetize a certain percentage of those subscribers, we get a percentage of that revenue. Now take that and multiply that times not 100 million people, but 500 million people or a billion people. And then now you say, okay, you got a $1 trillion company.
So in terms of importance and metrics, you said that engagement probably number one on fans base, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think engagement is definitely what users want. I want to free that because that's what people want to experience.
So don't like on Instagram, there's impression, and even on YouTube to a certain extent, there's impressions, there's reach.
Mm-hmm.
How do those metrics go inside? How do they work inside a fan base, right? Are those equally as important? Or is it just its engagement, its views, it's
so impressions? When you're talking about impressions, that's another way that you actually calculate like CPM and like the cost of it in advertising. All those things are done. See, all those metrics are based off how you advertise. Mm-hmm. If advertising is not the language that you're speaking, then you're not even. We're gonna we're going to monitor and see all of that data. So, because I would never say never for advertising. Even I'll say this right now, I would never say that Fanbase is never going to be a platform that has advertising. If we do, I'm going to find it in a way that doesn't interrupt the user experience. That's all I care about. I don't want to interrupt someone being, I get tagged in 10 posts a day of some creator saying, man, I'm about to leave because I post all this content and nothing ever gets seen. This is before they even got to the fact that people's content has value. This is before they even made a dollar. You got people wanting to quit social media just because they're not getting enough views. Forget about, I got to take these views to get to the money. I'm saying skip that whole little cat and mouse game and just go. Now this is the question that I ask when we onboard creators. We have creators come to the platform, they have large followings, and I said, okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you want to be rich? Do you want to be famous? Or do you want to be both? Right? If you want to be famous, stay over on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? If you want to be rich, then start charging for your content the moment that you create it. Like, create an exclusive paywall. Don't. If you want to be both, fan is probably where you want to be. Because there's no limit to the amount of reach you're going to be able to have, and there's no limit to the amount of monetization that you're going to be able to make.
How many users do you have right now?
595,000.
So how many users do you need to get a unicorn status?
It depends on the speed. So if I went from five, I'll give you a prime example. When in the pandemic, and it's still a rare thing, but when Clubhouse in about 4 or 5 months, they went from 5,000 users to 1 million users in like 5 or 6 months. That's when they went out and raised $100 million at a $1 billion valuation. Cause they got to 1 million users in like 5 or 6 months. So that velocity creating that, you know, and then it's also what people are actually, then here's another thing. It's also what the market is willing to pay, right? So it's also what institutional investors are willing to pay. If there's FOMO that happens, right? And again, it's beat them until it's join them. So when institutional investors get FOMO, like, okay, this train has left the station, we better get on board before we get left behind, then they set your valuation. So there's no difference between Fanbase and Clubhouse that was founded with institutional capital. There's a company that says, we're giving you money, we're giving you $100 million to say that your company's worth $1 billion. Then they went on to raise another $200 million at a $4 billion valuation. That is incredible to me. And still, they still have not figured out how to monetize over there. So again, I'm thinking like, okay, cool. So it's velocity in which you get there. So again, our goal is to get to 1 million users by the end of 2024. We could get there faster. Maybe we get to 2-3 million users. That changes because now, just by numbers alone, there's a monetary value that if we wanted to go the advertising route, there's a value that Fanbase has just based off the users.
So how are you tracking success at Fanbase, right? Because I know when we watch the reports that come from Meta,
mm-hmm.
number one metric they're looking at is monthly users.
Mm-hmm.
They're watching daily users, mm-hmm. right? Average daily users. If that number doesn't come in as expected, we're going to see a pullback, right?
Mm-hmm. So
what metric are you guys using to measure success? I guess on a daily, is it the same process for you?
It's MAU. But it's also our ability to kind of like fine tune our model, like this model of monetization that I think is so new that people don't understand that it's available for anybody to use. But I measure our success on our ability to build our product, remain well within our budget, and just continue to grow. Because once you start building a community, and somebody that I was always afraid about this and never really thought about it like this, but once you start to build a community, if you don't stop, your community is going to continue to grow. As long as, like even at the pace that Fanbase is, like right now, we're growing. And then we have spurts. We have people come on and maybe we might get 25,000 users out of nowhere because somebody makes a mistake, or I don't know what happens if TikTok goes away. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason why, like, some of this functionality that we create is like, all right, cool. Well, let's make sure we're prepared. We got the arc ready for the TikTok wave if they have to come over here while they figure out what's going on over there. So I measure our success by our ability to effectively execute our revenue model and then continue to keep people on the platform. Now, one thing I say about Fanbase, because we do have audio that makes us a little bit unique, is that audio. And I talk about the audio creator space, and I think that's something that people are missing out on. And I think people want to tap into more because it only requires one of your senses. Things that require less of your attention, but still can keep you engaged are also things that I think, that's why I think podcasts are so good. You know what I'm saying? I think audiobooks are so good because it's like, I can drive and listen to an audiobook or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I measure that also by retention. So people are spending 45 minutes. At one point, people were spending like an hour and a half a day on FedEx. And I mean, you'll go to websites and you'll go to current websites and people are spending 4 minutes on Nike.com. Like, you know, 4 minutes on TMZ, 7 minutes looking at articles or whatever. But you can hold, when you can keep, again, for advertising, when I can keep you on a platform for an hour and a half, okay, 45 minutes a day, we're up there with you. That's YouTube stickiness.
It's watch time.
Yeah.
So, all right, my brother, I'm going to let you close it out with this. What in 10 years from now, right?
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself? Where do you see fan base? And where do you see the creator economy?
Okay. Where do I see myself? I see myself probably, if I'm going to be, if I'm what I think about and how I speak about affirmative, I see myself as a successful tech founder that has founded multiple startups, that owns some sports franchise that's in Atlanta that needs to win a championship. I don't know which, but we need, you know, the Hawks need a title. I like basketball. We need a chip. So I would say I see myself as a multi-billionaire startup founder that owns the Atlanta Hawks that will do whatever it takes to bring a chip to the city. I see Fanbase as a multi-billion-dollar company just coming out of an acquisition or going public on the stock market and cashing out for all the investors. And I think the creator economy is going to be a $1 trillion business, because I think that everything is going to go from direct to person. I think there's like I saw Leo Cohen talk today about how, you know, the music streaming is going to go from, you know, 600 million users to 1 billion users by 2030, just in music streaming alone. So as we get younger and kids that are so used to living their lives in a digital space are going to do digital transactions, they're going to communicate virtually through the internet. I just don't see a world where people are using credit cards to subscribe. I see a world where people are using their apps to acquire content and things that they want, but in like such a fast pace and a real time that, you know, there's no limit to what people can do. It's pretty scary because, again, I just think about the opportunity that's there. But I'm optimistic about it because there are no limits. Like, there's nothing stopping anybody right now. Like what fan base is right now, there's nothing stopping anybody to say, cool, come here, hit this button, a screen pops up, hit subscribe, and you get paid. From anybody that's in 190 plus countries and territories that Fanbase is in on iOS or Android and actually making money. That's scary because when I saw this thing with NVIDIA on the Java, the NVIDIA rollout with the robots and all the chips and stuff they built.
With the black glove?
Yeah. Bro, I was saying, well, there goes your job. He said something. I was like, all them jobs is gone. He said something that the chip does. I was like, oh. That whole sector's gone. Like complete sectors of the industry are gonna be wiped out. And we're seeing massive layoffs in all these tech companies already. And the music business. And TV and film. Like, those three sectors, they're laying people off already. So 10 years, oh yeah. AI gonna be, if you don't have your own direct to consumer play, I don't know who gonna be working with who, I don't know what, but my suggestion is, as I always say, start monetizing your content in some way, because at least you'll be ahead of the curve. I know people want to be famous. I know people want to be seen. But you also got to understand that all this energy that we put into the stuff that we do has value. Monetize it. And you can do that on Fanbase.
And so what's the website?
Oh, startengine.com/fanbase to invest. Again, I'm going to tell you guys, this is probably one of the most pivotal times in technology and social media. that I've ever seen, because we're right here, and I'm specifically speaking to Black culture, right? If I had that, you know, if I'm here and I'm having that conversation with Black culture, I'm telling you that we, you know, we make all these platforms have their value. Like, we give these platforms the things that make them cool. If you listen, you cannot market and promote anything as being cool without the assistance of Black culture. So if somebody wears it, if somebody does it, it becomes the thing that everybody wants and everybody buys. And there's a value to that, that there's no infrastructure underneath it. There's no foundation, as opposed to being the oil, which I always feel like Black culture has always been the oil to corporate America's infrastructure. So I was like, okay, we're the record label, but you, all the sauce and all the dances and all that, y'all pump this through this, but we don't want y'all to own the well. And that's my whole thing is about, is like, we have to own infrastructure. If you're not building infrastructure, I think we're always going to be playing this game of where we want to be respected and we want our seat at the table and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yo, I'm right along with Tyler Perry. I'm building my own tech table. I'm not trying to be out of San Francisco, and I'm not trying to do any of that. I'm trying to give everybody an opportunity to own and be equitable and have that. So again, go to startengine.com/fanbase to invest. The minimum to invest is $3.99. We're raising $17 million. I say this number all the time because the average investment that we get, that we've been getting in this raise, we've already raised $300,000. So we just started like a week and a half ago. We've already raised $300,000. And what's more important about that is how fast we raise the capital. I don't doubt the ability that we'll raise $17 million. Mm-hmm. But is it going to take me a year, or is it going to take me 2 months? Or is it going to be 2 years, or is it going to take me 2 months? If I raise this money in 2 months, then we off to the races, and that's the velocity. So the opportunity to be able to do that. So, you know, owning part of this, going to Start Engine, and then being able to scale this business and really take advantage of what's going on. We have to do this. I'm looking like, yo, if we don't do this, don't blame me. Cause you know, I think I've done more than enough to say that we can do it.
There you have it, my brother. Appreciate you as always.
Thank you, guys, man.
Make sure that you download the Fan Base app.
Yeah, man.
And tap in.
Shout out InvestFest, ATL again, right?
For sure. Yeah, all for right. All right. Yeah, for.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.